Hello and welcome to Social Justice Matters, the podcast from Social Justice Ireland. My name is Suzanne Rogers and I am Research and Policy Analyst with Social Justice Ireland. If you're a regular listener, you'll know that our podcasts come in three different formats. We have our interview series where we chat to policy experts on a really wide range of topics. We have our 10-minute lesson series where we pick a particular issue and just hit on the key points we think people need to know in that sort of short time frame. Then we have our seminar series where we get the chance to listen back to presentations we've had at previous events. And this week it's one of those. This is a chance to listen back to a paper from our 2023 conference. I leave it to our chair on the day, Mick Clifford, to make the introduction. I hope you enjoy.
Our next speaker is Professor Brian Caulfield. Professor Caulfield is Head of Discipline, Department of Civil, Structural and Environmental Engineering in Trinity College Dublin. His research addresses global issues such as the environmental impacts of transport and methods to reduce the carbon impacts of transport. He's published over 200 papers in international journals and conferences and to date has been awarded approximately 7 million in research funding. He currently has 9 PhD students and 6 postdoctoral researchers in his research group. The title of his paper is Ensuring a Just Transition and Avoiding Advanced Transport Poverty in Ireland.
Thanks very much, Mick, for that introduction. Just a thumbs up maybe that you can see my slides and you can hear me. Yep, all good. Brilliant. All good. Super. So first of all, thank you very much for the invite here this morning and Suzanne for putting up with multiple emails for me. She's done an amazing job of pulling us all together and keeping us in check a long time before this morning. So thank you very much. And also, like the previous speaker, I'm in awe at some of the work that's been discussed already. I thought the talk on fashion, I've downloaded the app. It really makes me think. Okay, so I'm based in Trinity. All of my research and teaching are on transport. What I want to talk about this morning are the emissions from transport, government's current plans to mitigate these emissions, and why I think perhaps we're maybe not on the right track. So to start off with, our current emissions are about 19% of all greenhouse gas emissions are from transport. This was up 6%. So not to get into the carbon accounting that happens, but over the last year, we should have decreased our emissions by about 7%. But instead, we went up by 6%. 95% of these trips are from road-based transport. This is going to be one of the hardest sectors to decarbonize, and one of the sectors I feel, at least, that could have the most inequality. In the past decade, so how are we getting on in this pathway or roadway to transition? In 2022, 69% of all of our trips were taken by car, and a decade ago that was 70%. So we're not doing well. We're not going anywhere near fast enough. We're not going anywhere. Our policies aren't targeted enough. I'll talk about that a bit later. But the mocha just isn't decreasing. And 1% in a decade is not good. I'm going to talk that. So these data come from the National Transport Authority, their travel survey. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that data and why we're in the situation we're in. In rural Ireland, 38% of people are within a 15-minute walk of a shop, and then this goes up to 97-98% plus in our cities. So walking to amenities, so there's a couple of concepts that I want to talk about this morning. One is transport poverty, and transport poverty is when people are forced to own a car because they have no other alternatives. So if we look at the population right across the island, we can see that about 75% of people, or 3.8 million people, are within a 15-minute walk of a shop. So the NTA put this data together to show how close people are to different amenities. So you can see as well there, restaurants, pubs, bus stops, all of these things. And I suppose some of the critical ones here are proximity to pharmacy, proximity to healthcare. It's not in this data set, but the proximity to education and employment, again, are also vital. So this is it nationally. But then when we go to Dublin and the suburbs, as you can see in Dublin, The percentages near a bus stop is at 98%, shop 97%. So everybody, because of the size of the county and because of the density that we have in Dublin, that everybody is very close to all of the different kind of things that I suppose living in Dublin that we take for granted on a daily basis. But then when we get to rural Ireland, this is where transport and accessible inequality can happen, especially if you want to get to any of these things without a car. So the shop access in 15 minutes drops to 38% and the bus access drops to 28%. In Dublin, we know buses are very regular on most routes. But say, for example, in rural Ireland, that 28% of people within a 15-minute walk, there's no metric there, I suppose, for how frequent those bus services are. Are they one every hour, one every day, that type of thing? So the accessibility here is not something that we have a huge amount of information on. And then again, when you get to pharmacies and healthcare, you can see that accessibility and access drops off a cliff. So why are we in the, like, you just to, before we start to think about how we're going to reduce our emissions, what is the current state of play? So this is the population distribution from the census, from the data that we collected last year. Dublin and the suburbs make up about a quarter of the population on the island. And then you can see in the most rural parts of Ireland, it's about the same. Then when you look in terms of the population, you can see that Cork, Limerick, Waterford and Galway, they make up a relatively small proportion of our population right across the island. So trying to deliver good quality public transport, good quality accessibility in an island that has been set up for the car to be king and for everybody to be able to live very far away from each other is very problematic. And even in Dublin, we don't the provision that we provide isn't as good as it could be. Then when we look at, well, you know, that's our population density. What's it like across Europe? So here, this is where we are, 72 people per square kilometre. The EU average is 186. Malta kind of skews the average a little bit, but you can see that we are well below the EU average in terms of density. So that then makes it much more difficult for us to provide good quality public transport. So there's been a lot about this in the media. There's been an awful lot about this coming out from government. To reduce our transport emissions by 50% by 2030. That's the legally binding target that has been put into the Climate Action Plan. Even the best estimates with many additional measures, the best estimates of the EPA is that we could get to maybe the mid-30s in terms of a percentage reduction. No one's ever done this before. No one has ever decarbonized the transport sector in such a short space of time by such a drastic amount. So what's in this plan? Reduce the vehicle kilometers traveled by 20%, a 50% reduction in fuel consumption, a 50% increase in active trips, a 130% increase in public transport trips, and then sell a million electric vehicles or electric cars. So when I started off a couple of slides back, I spoke about the mode share, and that's dropped by 1% in a decade. To get this type of change to happen is almost like we would have to become on a war footing to have this type of reduction and change happen. And the amount of extra public transport that would be required. And to give some context, back when we were only allowed to travel 1 kilometre, 5 kilometres, whatever it was back in COVID, our emissions didn't decrease by the amount that we're looking to do it by. So it is a monumental task. And my fear, and some of my most recent research, is starting to point out that this transition could be inequitable. And it may exacerbate transport poverty. So this is the program that the government wants us to look at: avoid, shift, and improve. So avoid the need for traveling in the first place, working from home, better planning, all of these types of things. Shift is moving towards better public transport, active modes, and then improve is by improve is where we look to electrify our taxi fleets, electrify everything that moves, basically. In the climate action plan, of the emissions we want to reduce, 21% will come from avoid, 21% will come from shift, and almost 60%, 58% will come from improve. So we're betting the kitchen sink on improve. This is how we're going to do it. Okay, so within this, we need to sell as many electric vehicles as possible. That's in the plan. And in this graph here, you can see the number of vehicles that we sold between 2012 and 2022. You can see the yellow line here, and that's the one that we really need to pay attention to, is the number of electric vehicles that we sold in this country. The other ones we need to get rid of. We sell on average about 100,000 cars, new cars in this country every year. To reach our target by 2030, to get to 1 million, we could be selling up to 200,000 cars a year if we don't phase out petrol and diesel cars right now. So unless right now we stop selling anything that doesn't have a plug attached to it, we're going to run into difficulties of hitting that 60%. But let's assume for a second, let's say we get there and we get this 60%. What do car sales look like at the moment? This is what car sales look like at the moment. So the yellow line here is every other car that's sold. And then the three, the blue, the orange, and the gray are SUVs. So as you can see, over the past decade, the numbers of SUVs that have been sold has increased exponentially. There are different categories of SUVs. So say the gray ones and the orange ones could really only be just taller versions of smaller cars that have the same engines and in terms of emissions aren't that bad. But it's the blue ones. Those are the ones that are causing much higher emissions. And again, these are being bought and sold in the most expensive ones are being bought and sold in the more affluent parts of the country. The other thing to bear in mind here is that an average SUV will have a 20% extra emissions profile compared to a regular car. And then that means that for every one electric car, for every SUV we're selling, we might be knocking out the benefits of some of the electric cars. So the research, what does the research say? So I've put QR codes here on the papers if anybody's interested. I'm sure we'll share the slide deck as well on what the research is saying. So this is a paper that was published last year, and it looks at the equity impacts of government subsidies on electric vehicles. So these are two maps. The first map here shows the blue dots are places that have purchased an electric vehicle. So they've purchased, they've had a grant from SEAI to get an EV charging location. And then the other map shows the deprivation index. Again, and a shout out here to, well, SEAI for providing the first set of data, but Pubble do amazing work. Their database on deprivation gives us a massive insights, in my field at least, in transportation, into understanding equity impacts. And it's one of the things that's really difficult to do in say transport engineering. So the data that they provide is great. But the yellow areas here are the more affluent areas, and that's where all these electric cars have been sold. Equally, when you look at the CSO, so this is to hone in on Dublin, the more affluent areas, the more likely you are to find an electric car in a driveway. Then equally with income, using CSO values for income, comparing the two, and in the paper, there's correlations and all these other kind of things, and they do show that there's a massive correlation between both income and your ability to purchase an electric vehicle, which is an obvious thing, I suppose. But the purpose of the research is to show where it's happening. The other thing about this and the patterns of where they've been sold in the areas that have better public transport options. In Dublin, the average distance traveled by a commuter or on an annual basis is much less than it is, say, for example, in the west of Ireland and Donegal. in Mayo. So the people that are buying the cars aren't the right people, right, at the moment. And again, these are just to hone in on Dublin on income and the distribution. The second paper I want to talk about, it again, the QR code is there, and it's about transport poverty and transport deprivation. Again, using a colleague of mine from UCD and a colleague, a former colleague who's a PhD, they were both former PhD students of mine, who's now based out in Brazil. We looked at finding areas of transport disadvantage and car dependency in Ireland. So what we looked at were three different databases. Again, the deprivation index from Pubble. We had the public transport access database from the NTA, and then from the CSO, areas of high single car ownership. And if you fell between the three of these triangles, then you were potentially in forced car ownership, in that you had to own a car because there was no other alternative, and perhaps you couldn't afford it. This shows the public transport density, where it is across the country, who has best access to public transport. Then this next slide shows the deprivation index, and then the transport disadvantage and advantage index. Who's got the best public transport? Who's got the worst? And you can see in the slide, the map on your right, that around the cities, that there's obviously better public transport access or better access. And then this final map then brings it all together. It clusters the data. It enables us then to say, well, look, these are the areas that have high car ownership, single car ownership, low income, and very poor other alternatives to the car. So we did it for 2 years, 2011 and 2016. These were both census years. And at the moment, we're working on the 2022 data. This shows us where people are in our country that are in transport poverty, and they have to own a car, and perhaps they can't afford to own it. So to go back to electric vehicles, how affordable are they? So this is a question myself and a couple of my postdocs had recently. And we were wondering, you know, with the electric vehicles, how many households can actually afford to purchase them and purchase them new? So we looked at a number of different scenarios. We looked at households buying an EV, paying it back over 3 years, over 5 years, small EVs, big EVs. Then what would happen if the 20% price reduction were actually to happen? So a lot of people think that the price of EVs will drop by 20%. So what happens if the current price dropped by 20%? We looked at people's incomes across the country. We looked at their disposable income and if they would be able to repay a loan for over 5 or 3 years for an electric vehicle. And this is what the results showed. So the results showed, so for example, in scenario three, this was a small house a small EV repaid over 3 years and then over 5 years. And then you can see the number of households. So the number of households that fall below the affordability threshold. So 75% of Irish households couldn't afford the smaller EV to be paid back over 3 years. It goes up to 61 over 5 years. And then if there was this 20% reduction, it would jump to 55% of households couldn't afford it. So 45% of households could afford these electric vehicles to be paid back, assuming this 20% reduction is happening. And data that came out this week showed that the price of car loans has just increased dramatically. So my issue here is that the government policy that is there to decarbonize 60% of the transport sector is not affordable by the majority of people. These are some maps, again, showing what the other map showed, that the affordability is obviously linked into the cities. And the people in the rural parts of Ireland that drive longer distances, with more likely with diesel and petrol vehicles causing more emissions, don't have the purchasing power to get one of these vehicles. And then my fear is that they will be left behind, not even getting anywhere near the charging infrastructure that's required as well. But not to end on a, I always like to end presentations on a positive note. So this morning I'm actually in Athlone attending a Pathfinder workshop for the Department of Transport. And I went for a walk this morning after after breakfast. I saw this. I was so impressed. So if those of you that don't know, or maybe somebody is an athlone as well today, there's a fully electric bus fleet. And as I took the picture of the bus coming towards me, almost on cue, as if Bus Éireann knew, there was a wheelchair passenger that got off at the charging stations. These, again, in terms of access, wheelchair accessible charging stations are really important. And again, they have them here in Athlone. So there are green shoots. Things are starting to look good, but I'm still very concerned about betting the house on these on electric cars. So to conclude, the government policy on delivering the policy that's charged with delivering the majority of emissions is inequitable. Not everybody can afford an electric car. It may take several decades for electric vehicles to either reach price parity or for a secondhand electric market to work for everybody. That's because people tend to hold on to electric vehicles longer because they're better vehicles and they last longer. Other countries are seeking to incentivize the secondhand electric car market, and they give grants for that. That is something I think we should need to be looking at. The other thing I think we need to be looking at is more nuance. I know nuance and government policy aren't things that generally go hand in hand, but I think more nuance on where these grants are being put. We did some modeling on this, and that if emissions reduction is what we want to do, we wouldn't sell any electric cars in Dublin or Cork. We would sell them all outside of the two biggest cities. So more targeted grants, more nuance for those people living in rural Ireland. I do think initiatives like Connecting Ireland have massive potential to close this gap on rural transport poverty in Ireland. I do think that this is really important in terms of ensuring equal access for employment, healthcare, education, and for it to be a just transition. And as I said, at the moment, I'm still very concerned that that may not be the case. But when this happens, and, you know, the OECD did a massive review of this last year for government, it improves well-being, health, access to green spaces, recreational facilities. All of these things are so positive. And I think we can get there. I don't think we'll get there in the 2030 timeline that government have set out. And I suppose that the parting message is that in terms of mobility, because it's so key for every aspect of our lives to ensure that everything is just and equal, that we start to refocus our plans and transport with that lens very much at the forefront. And I am going to finish on that. And again, thank you, everybody, for the opportunity to speak here this morning.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. If there's any questions or queries or ideas that you might have for future conversations, please feel free to email us at secretary@socialjustice.ie. Until next time, stay safe.